Well, good morning.
Good morning.
I wonder about cell phones and how wonderful it is we can start them so they ring low and then they get higher and higher and higher. Except when we're in a public place, as I'm trying to quiet it down and I'm leaving, it's getting louder and louder. But that is 21st century, isn't it? Here we are at the turn of the year with so many different holidays. Christmas, we celebrate the solstice, and often we hear wars of Christmas, which we spoke about last time, the war on Christmas. But I also wonder the meaning of this particular time of the year, and what are we to do with it? We certainly are occupied, as much as I promise myself that I will be frugal in gifts as Christmas draws near. All of a sudden, the people in my life pop into my head, and I start matching gifts with them, and frugal goes out the window, it seems. And so our minds are occupied with images and expectations that we wish that we didn't have often and that we could be free of, but nonetheless, there we are, sometimes hoping for newness, which is what this time of the year brings about, a sense of newness and a sense of hope. Hoping that something can break into our lives and give us a sense of newness and give us a sense of hope, yet our minds occupied with different images and things to do and we're busy, and somehow often we get lost in all of that. And how do we establish our center and establish our sense of availability to newness? Are we available for newness? Or are we busy thickening our mind with images and things to do? I think about spirituality at this time of the year, and we hear a lot of words in conversation about spirituality, but there is a truth of spirituality that doesn't get often talked about, and that is spirituality is praxis. You don't really, I guess we can talk about spirituality, we can read about spirituality, we can wish for spirituality, but you really do spirituality. It's a practice. And I was wondering how long it took for human beings to realize days were getting longer and days were getting shorter, and actually how many years and decades and centuries it might have taken to decide this is the shortest day, this is the longest day. And what it meant that when we discovered that days got longer and days got shorter, that we were waiting, and all of a sudden we begin to recognize the day indeed is beginning getting longer, and we say, thank goodness that the day is getting longer, because now we have more light. I don't know how many of you all struggle with this, but I like it when it's light at 9 or 10 o'clock. I enjoy the light, and so I watch the seasons pass. I often mark my seasons and by the grass. You know, how do we mark the season? I know when it's winter because my grass stops growing. That's how I know it's winter. How do we mark the seasons? How do I stop and still myself to notice the earth? And this time of the year, the solstice, is about stopping and noticing the earth. And I'm going to suggest a spiritual practice that we can engage in during the course of the year when our mind gets flooded in our era of time with images. And this practice is simply this. Find a place in your yard, in your neighborhood, relatively close that you have easy access to. Find a place and somehow organize your life that at the same time of the day or the same time of the evening, you can go stand in that place. And hopefully when you look around, you don't see wires or you don't see buildings. You see clouds and maybe some trees. And watch the difference that occurs throughout the year, the way the sun moves and the way the moon moves. Connect yourself to the earth and actually stop and breathe. And allow the images at that moment in time to fill you. As our culture has normalized anxiety and depression, as if that's part of what it means to be human, maybe anxiety and depression, the normalization of anxiety and depression, is really about the images and what we fill ourselves up with. This spiritual practice will bring us a sense of being centered and a sense of calmness. And can you imagine if you did that once a day for 365 days out of the year? What would that be like for you? How would you be different if each day you noticed the shading on your yard is a bit different because the earth and the sun are in different places? And you notice that as the year goes by. How would we be different if our mind was filled with the movement of the earth? I've been practicing this, and usually I try to practice what I preach. So I've been practicing this, and I've noticed that when I choose to go outside and experience that moment in time, at the same time, it gets close to a TV program I like. I experience tension. It's absolutely amazing. So I started paying attention to my inner world in relationship to the television. And I've got a habit of watching television at particular times, particular people on television evoke particular feelings. And it's not that I get used to them. In an odd way, it becomes part of me, part of the rituals of my life. And I begin to thicken my mind and my story with these rituals of input from values that are not necessarily congruent with my values or could be congruent with my values. When that happens, when I noticed that I had a tension, I was resistant to newness coming into my life. I was resistant to hearing something different. Because when I step outside, and especially I've got this one spot where when the moon is just right, and there's this palm tree, and it kind of gets there, and you look through, and you see this space in the palm tree, and you see the full moon there, it's absolutely wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. And my mind gets emptied out, and that's what happens in my mind. And that is newness. That is something that's different, because it's different in each day that I experience it. So spirituality is a practice. It is something we do. What causes us resistance to practicing this kind of spirituality? And this day when I am, this time of the year when I am to stop and reflect and make meaning on who I am, my community, the place in which I live, isn't that what we do at this time of the year? We New Year's resolutions, which often end up disappoint ourselves or we celebrate ourselves, many different things. And what is this idea of this newness breaking in? What is that about? And so I think I have to identify the soup in which I live in. What is the soup in which I live in? It's like a fish. Does a fish know it's wet? No, it doesn't know it's wet until it started crawling out. Then it knew it was wet when it came back. What is? And I'm suggesting today that there is a soup in which we live in, and that soup in which we live in has gotten the name patriarchy. And patriarchy is actually kind of simple. And the patriarchal soup that we live in, dominance is a high value. To dominate is a value. To acquire is a value. And I thought about, I'll read the Wikipedia and go get a bunch of definitions on patriarchy and read it, and that'll do it. But I thought, I think there's a better way to communicate what patriarchy is. And I guess this will be familiar with some of you, but whenever you hear that term patriarchy from now on, think of these words, because I think this is the outcome of patriarchy. It's at this point I wish I had a singing voice, but you'll be grateful I won't sing this. They paved paradise and put a parking lot and put up a parking lot with a pink hotel and a bouquet and a swimming hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that, don't you know, that until it's gone, they paved paradise and put up a parking lot. They've paved paradise and put up a parking lot. They took all the trees, and put them in a tree museum, and they charged the people $1.50 to see them. Don't you know they've paved paradise and put up a parking lot? Yes. Patriarchy. The paving of paradise and putting up a parking lot. Now, many of us might have favorite spots that we go to that have been paved over. I can remember when I was in a seminary and we took this class. I forget the name of the class, exactly what it was. But on this day, we were exploring with finding God. Where do you find God? So the professor took us on a bus and took us downtown and said, go out and find God. And that was what we do in the city of Atlanta, go out and find God. So we were walking across, I guess it's a catwalk of sorts, a walkway over top of, is it 85 runs through Atlanta? 85, and that is, if you've ever been there, is an absolute mess. And how, where are we going to find God? And it came to me, before this song idea came to me, well, I know where we're going to find God. God's under the concrete. That's where we're going to find God. We have indeed buried God. You know, so I can see that externally, what we do to our environment. My goodness gracious, we have legalized destroying the earth. You know, that's where we are in patriarchy. That's where we are. That's what we have legalized. And here I am trying to figure out how to experience newness on a wonderful holiday season when we have all these thoughts. And then I got to thinking, is it possible that I have paved over paradise in my own mind? Is that possible? That my mind is filled with so much stuff that the paradise that is part of who I am as a human being, the part of me, my soul, the part of me that moves toward compassion, the part of me that moves toward liberty, the part of me that really moves toward freedom, the part of me that's collaborative, the part of me that talks to other people, listens to other people, hears other people, the part of me that's willing to change, the soul of what it means to be human, have I paved it over in my mind that I can no longer get in touch with it? And here I am celebrating this season of newness. Back to the fish story. When the fish finally did crawl out of the ocean, it went on a journey. It saw valleys, it saw mountains, it saw all kinds of wonderful things. So this fish had an idea that it was going to go back into the water and it was going to share what it discovered with all the other fish. So it did. What do you think happened when the fish went back and shared with the other fish all the discoveries that it made? They called on the sharks to eat the fish. And that was about good and wonderful things. It is often the case, and it is my case as well, that when we as young adults run off to seminary, we come from a wonderful community that's affirming, that's loving, and that's proud of their young people getting the calling to run off to seminary and to do ministry. But something happens just like that fish story. We run off to seminary and we see new things. We see new theologies. We see new ways of thinking. We see a history and a much fuller sense of what it is, and it's alive. And my goodness, the theology that I believed in all my life stands in a line here. Then there's another one here, and another one here, and another one here. And I think, after I go through my faith crisis, this is great. This is neat. And then I'm going to go back to my community and share with them all that I've learned, because I know they want to hear all that I've learned because they set me off to learn it. So I go back to that community, and they say, where have you been? Who have you been talking to? True story, when I was first thinking about seminary, Dallas Theological Seminary or Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, and a lot of people in my community said, go to Dallas because that's where they preach the word. Don't go to Southern Baptist Theological Seminary because there's demons there. Now, I already knew church from 17 older, so I... whatever church, the church I was in, I just thought that's what all churches taught. And I knew we were in a fight, because that church taught that we were in a fight. And I thought, well, if that's where the demons are, then why aren't we going there? Because that's where the fight is. So I chose that. And after a month and a half, I was soundly defeated in that fight and started learning. But I could not go back to that community with those new words. Newness could not break in. There's a story during Hitler's persecution of the Jews, in which somebody escaped from Auschwitz, came back to a city in Transylvania and said, "Do you know what's happening? There's a crisis happening. You can't go. You have to fight. You have to resist." The people couldn't hear that newness. And that person watched the conformity of those people to the oppression. They couldn't hear the newness. They couldn't hear it. The allegory of the caves. People are living in the caves and they see the shadows in the caves in reflection. And to them, the shadows are reality. And they talk about the shadows and the reality of the shadows. And one finally gets out and escapes and sees what's out there and comes back. Gets killed as well. So when we talk about newness, and we talk about bringing newness to the world, and with a sense of spirituality, we need to stop and think. Do we want to practice that kind of spirituality in which we experience newness, or we are the messengers of newness? For Jesus, the inbreaking into history, into a culture where an imperialistic empire was the rule of the day, he broke into history with a new message to bring newness. That life didn't have to be this way. That we could treat one another equally. That we could be kind to one another. That the ultimate meaning of life and the ultimate expression of what God is an attitude of love toward one another. That was the inbreaking of newness through the message of Jesus. That God is love, that we could break in, and His understanding of where He was in His culture is that love would move us to be kinder toward one another. What happened to that messenger of newness? He too was killed. How are we to experience newness in a culture that's dominated by a thought pattern that doesn't allow newness during this season? How are we to do that? In the past year, we've talked often about the dark mother, and we've talked about the value systems, pre-patriarchy, 15,000 years ago and 10,000 years ago, and how the best archaeological understanding of what we have is that there was a culture pre-patriarchy, and it wasn't matriarchy, but the value systems of that culture were transformation, change, care, cooperation, and the best that we can figure out. But that was so long ago, and it doesn't hardly make sense. How do we bring those values? How do we understand how that culture was structured, that transformation, newness, was a norm? How do we get ideas and how do we get insight into a culture when we're thick in it? Not too long ago, patriarchy from Europe met a culture that was not patriarchal. The Native American culture. As a matter of fact, a tribe in New England, and just think about where they were living in Martha's Vineyard, and what a coastline up in New York, a beautiful area. The Wampanoags, it's kind of a confederation of different tribes. They had lived there for 10,000 years, evidence says. There wasn't genocide among them. They didn't wipe each other out. How is it that this group of people could live
10,000 years without having war as a dominant way of life? How could they have done it? How can we learn from this culture and possibly learn, really, really learn what newness is? How can we understand the message of Buddha when Buddha talks about all bureaucratic structures, all ideology is really an illusion? When we hear the words of Jesus saying, you know, don't treasure the values on this earth, that you will have my joy and my peace that's beyond this world, the values of this world. So how is it that these Native Americans could live for 10,000 years and really have a democratic society? Newness. What was it about this particular group of people that could travel through time and not murder one another as normal? Not be dominated by violence? Not have domination as a value? The women were in charge. After 10,000 years of struggling as a confederation, the mothers had the final word on who was going to lead. They even have the image of if the clan of mothers didn't like what the chief was doing, they would literally go and take either the antlers or the horn gear the chief was wearing and take them. Can you imagine somebody coming grabbing your antlers and horn and taking them when that's your right to power and disempower that person? My guess is I'd behave so that that wouldn't happen. I can remember a time working construction and my partner was doing something that the superintendent really didn't like. So you know, carpenter, you have your tool belts and hammer and a tool belt, and the superintendent came over to him and grabbed a hammer out of his tool belt and went and banged onto the drywall to show him what he's doing wrong. And I thought, oh man, you grabbed a hammer from the tool belt. That's sacred. You just don't do that. I think that's the closest I can get to the image of the mothers of the clan saying no to the chief that they've appointed, and they could remove him. Not only the Wampanoag tribe had that, but the Iroquois. And in the Native Americans, this was commonplace. This non-patriarchal society, this political and social structure was commonplace. 10,000 years they lived without destroying one another in that particular area of the country. In this time and in this season of newness, I'm going to suggest that somehow we open up ourselves to experience the voices, not just of history, but of people today that are non-patriarchal people. And I say to myself, where am I going to find such a person? How am I going to do that? We are very good as a culture at marginalizing people and pushing people out. And when they say stuff we don't like, we are good at shaming them. Dennis Kucinich got shamed. When the Europeans met the Cherokee, they would say to the Native American males, you're letting the petticoats boss you around. Shame was a way to change that society. Shame was a way to keep us in our place. How are we going to find a culture where shame is not a dominant feature, where dominance is not a dominant feature, to give me insight to help me learn how to allow newness to come into my being? We need to hear the voices of the Wiccans, of the pagans, of the Native Americans who are in our community and part of our faith tradition today. We need to hear those voices. We need to be intentional about hearing those voices. Not that these people come and knock on our door and say, we have something to say to you. We need to say, please come and talk to us. Please come and teach us. Bring the gifts you have to give to us this season And help us understand who we are, how we are caught up in a web of dominance, a web of oppression that we participate in, yet at the same time we abhor. We participate in it, and yet we speak against it. But yet we find ourselves trapped in that, and we don't know how to get out of it. Well, we need to invite people to come into our lives to teach us. People who have a different mindset than us. That would be the gift of newness. To admit that I have that to learn, that I am in a suit that would prevent me from learning, that would prevent me from seeing differently. To admit that, and then to invite others to come speak and to come teach. Our responsibility as Unitarian Universalists, our responsibility is to listen and to hear the voices of all the people in our community.